call the docket.
Robert B. Fisher, Ben Applegate, Sales, Kelly Bird, Robert B. Williams Jr., Eric C. Howland, John A. Hutchings, the appellant, John A. Trump III, Gerald B. Green, J. Drake Walker IV, West Virginia Body of the Appellant.
You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Jack Hutchings, and I am appearing on behalf of the appellants this morning. Your Honors, the appellee's entire argument to both the Circuit Court and to this Court is premised upon a single premise. And that premise is that under the doctrine of independent legal significance, this Court must determine that the domestication of Hales, Virginia Corporation to a Delaware Corporation precludes both the Virginia Court's review on an equitable basis of the transactions by which the sale of Tales Virginia's assets were ultimately sold, and that as a matter of law, no claim can be stated by the appellees under any set of facts which would allow a Virginia court to review on an equitable basis the contract and the transactions by which Tales Virginia sold all of its assets. Now, the issue before the Court today is not whether, in fact, the appellants are entitled to a declaration that, in fact, they do have appraisal rights, because in the court below, a demurrer was sustained. So the issue before the court is whether the complaint states a claim for relief, and the claim for relief being that the court should look through the form of these transactions to the true substance of these transactions, an exercise of the court's equitable powers, which it does all the time, and to apply the related step transaction doctrine. Now, although the appellee's argument has some superficial appeal, it's simply an incorrect argument because the doctrine of independent legal significance is not applicable to the facts of this case as pled. The doctrine of independent legal significance applies a limited application, and it applies when a transaction is affected under one section or one statute of the corporation code. In that instance, the court will not invalidate the transaction by applying or judging the transaction under another section of the corporate code. Now, there are two cases which have been cited in various briefs which I think illustrate this point. The first one is a case called Harrington. It's a Delaware case, and it was principally cited by the appellees. And in Harrington, a corporation sold all of its assets to another corporation and in exchange received stock. The selling corporation then distributed the stock to its shareholders in liquidation. Very similar to a merger transaction, in which one corporation is merged into another, the corporation which doesn't survive, those shareholders receive stock in the surviving corporation. Under Delaware law, a sale of assets does not trigger appraisal rights in Delaware. So in the Harrington case, the dissident shareholders sued, claiming that the transaction was in effect a de facto merger and asking that the court judge the transaction under a different set of statutes. The court declined to do that, finding that the transaction had been properly consummated under the sale of assets statutes, and that therefore under the doctrine of independent legal significance, the court would not recast the transaction. In other words, it wouldn't say, we're going to call this a merger even though you complied over here with the sale of assets statutes. Now, according to Tales Virginia,
your problem is that this is a distinct situation. I mean, the idea of step transactions applies to the circumstances that you have just outlined. Is this a sale of stock? Is it a sale of assets? Is it a merger? And we're going to analyze it and figure out exactly what it is. I don't think there's any question, but the step transaction doctrine applies to that. But your initial problem, I think, in this case, is that the right of appraisal does not extend to your clients because the Model Business Act was adopted in Virginia in part, but the part that's missing is the ability to have appraisal rights. And domestication issues under the Virginia Code obviously now does not trigger that. So how do you deal with the problem that the Model Code actually was adopted in not in full, but in some, but excluded appraisal rights from domestication, which is how this whole thing started?
Well, first of all, to the extent that question involves the legislative intent, excuse me, I don't think the legislative intent as it is at issue in this case, because we don't contest that the Virginia statute does not set as a trigger domestication, as trigger for appraisal rights, domestication. We are not contesting the form of the transaction at all or asking that it be recast as anything other than a transaction as to what it was.
So you don't contest that the domestication process in Delaware was wrong in any way, shape, or form?
No, we are not contesting that. But what we are saying
But once that happens, then, aren't you just subject to Delaware laws? Your Delaware corporation, whatever happens after that, is subject to Delaware law.
Well, I think that goes contrary to, first of all, the step transaction doctrine, as well as the equitable doctrine of courts regard substance over form. The claim in this case
is... But that's not the transaction. The transaction happened after you became a Delaware corporation. So now analyze the transaction.
If you view the steps in isolation, which is the premise of your question, I believe, you are taking the domestication step and you are saying, under the contract, first of all, there were four steps. They're set out in Section 2.1.
And the first one you can legally do under Virginia law, domesticate without triggering the appraisal rights, and then the question is, does the transaction trigger appraisal rights, correct?
The question
and we look
is,
at the steps of the transaction.
Does the overall transaction, the sale of assets, trigger appraisal rights under Virginia law? That's the claim. If you take the step of domestication and you separate that from the other three steps, then you're saying a corporation, a Virginia corporation, can always avoid appraisal rights on the sale of assets. Because all a Virginia corporation need now do, if that's the ruling, is structure a step transaction and say, we're going to move this corporation to Delaware and then sell our assets. And shareholders in Virginia corporations essentially will no longer have appraisal rights on the sale of assets by a Virginia corporation. Because any Virginia corporation can do this. And when you look at the purpose of the appraisal rights, is to afford an inexpensive means and remedy for shareholders to obtain fair value.
Do you have any case that includes the domestication process in the definition of transaction for the purpose of the step transaction rule?
No, I don't believe such a case exists. Neither side has cited one. But I think that there are cases, numerous cases, and principally, again, from Delaware, because that's the leading jurisdiction, obviously, on corporate law, where regardless of the structure, the form of the transaction, in an appropriate case, the courts will look to the form or the substance of the transaction.
But the problem is the definition of transaction, and that's what I was trying to get to. You can't point me to a case that has the domestication part of this case as a part of the transaction itself. As Justice Goodwin was saying, he believes, and I believe the case law supports it, the transaction that you're looking at is what occurred in Delaware after domestication. And if that's the case, the law doesn't apply to you.
Well, first of all, that's not our claim. Our claim is that the transaction consists of all four steps. And that's consistent with exactly the position that Tails takes in its material that it distributed prior to the transaction to the shareholders. It says the domestication step is being taken for the non-tax business purpose of facilitating the sale of assets. The material itself, which is distributed, says the domestication step is part of the transaction itself. So you have the appellees, or Tails Virginia, first of all, in materials it puts out, and that statement is found in the joint appendix at page 27, saying the domestication is part and parcel of the transaction, number one. You have a contract which says Tails Virginia is selling its assets, and it's going to do so in four steps. Four steps are one, domestication, two, merger, three, amendment, last step being the sale. They don't parse them out. It's not a case where domestication occurred for an independent reason other than the sale, and therefore, because the domestication was part and parcel of the sale, I believe it is part of the transaction.
Sir, was Holdco created before or after the domestication?
I'd probably have to look at the actual filing documents. Essentially, it was simultaneously. The transactions and the transaction documents are attached. I believe they all occurred, the filings all occurred October 7 to October 9. Tales Virginia itself asserts the entire transaction occurred on October 7th.
Okay.
I do know that Tales Holdco was not created until after the purchase agreement was entered into. So again, Tales Holdco, which was part of the transaction, all of this was one transaction. I think if you look at the diagram in our brief, it outlined the four steps. Again, domestication, the merger, which Holdco was created as part of that structure, the amendment, which was solely necessary, again, to affect the transaction, and again, all this is stated in the offering material, and then the sale.
How would you apply the rule as you want it to be applied? If the company decided they were going to domesticate in Delaware and then waited 3 years, would you still have a step transaction argument?
I don't believe so. Unless you had some evidence.
How about 3 weeks?
I think it's a facts and circumstances question. I don't think there's a bright timeline. I think you have to look at the facts and circumstances of the entirety of what happened. 3 years would, in my mind, suggest that there was most likely an independent reason for the domestication. If 3 years before today you had domesticated and now you decide to sell the assets, 3 weeks may very well suggest, given the timelines that it takes to put together these types of transactions, or perhaps there's a contract that may exist which ties it all together. For example, this contract was executed as of August 9th, yet the transaction didn't occur until 2 months later. So if the domestication in this case had occurred 3 weeks earlier, my position would still be the same. It's part and parcel of the same transaction when you have a contract which makes it part and parcel of the same transaction. So the cases, and the cases talk about this particularly, the step transaction doctrine, the timing is a factor, but it's only one factor.
I tell you what the dilemma for me is, and maybe you can address it directly. The step transaction rule, generally speaking, is designed to define what kind of transaction took place. In this case, the domestication is used to define what law governs it. And that's the distinction that I find troubling.
And I'm sorry, what was the case, Your Honor? I missed the case you were talking about.
No, I'm saying that ordinarily the step transaction doctrine is used to define what the transaction was. Is it a stock transfer? Is it a sale of stock? Is it a sale of assets? Is it a merger? And you look at the various transactions to determine what it is. Domestication, by contrast, is for the purpose of determining what law applies, not what the transaction was.
Well, in, for example, the Noddings and the Coughlin case, they used the step transaction to interpret a contract and to determine what the substance of the contract and the transactions called for by that contract really are. I think that's the same thing we're asking here. We have a contract. The contract calls for certain acts and transactions to occur, and we're saying, now what's the effect of applying the step transaction doctrine to those transactions? And we believe that they should be treated and not as separate steps, but as one transaction. Now, if you treat them as one transaction, what should occur, what should be triggered? For example, both in Noddings and Coughlin, it was talking about, did it trigger certain rights or events? We're talking about the same thing. Is our appraisal rights triggered if you consider this one transaction?
So could I ask you a quick question? As I understand it, the shareholders voted on the purchase agreement and the four steps before they were implemented. Is that correct?
Correct. It was all one vote.
Okay, one vote. The majority won that vote, so to speak. And it seems to me that once they have approved all of these steps, it's a little bit different than the corporation just taking some steps that may or may not require a majority a vote of the shareholders. Does that have any impact on the step use of the step transaction?
I don't believe it does, because we're talking about an equitable doctrine. We're talking about equitable concepts. We're not saying the vote was improper. We're not saying that the statutes were not followed. And that's when the equitable concepts are applied. For example, the Lampers case. Again, they didn't say you did anything wrong under the corporation code. They just looked through the form of what was done and said, here's the substance of what you did. you have appraisal rights because of the substance of what you did, even though you complied with all of the statutes. They didn't allow the defense in that case to use the legal significance doctrine to say, no, you don't have appraisal rights, because they could separate the separate transactions.
Let me ask you this question, if I might, before you sit down. Your prayer for relief here is for us to reverse the ruling of the circuit court and to declare that the complaint does state a claim upon which relief can be granted. What is the relief that you request in the circuit court?
Ultimately, a declaration that we do have appraisal rights under Virginia law.
Even though they're domesticated under Delaware?
Yes.
Well, you don't contest that that was done properly.
We don't contest it was done properly, but at the time we filed the complaint prior to that act occurring. This court had jurisdiction of the entirety of the case at that point in time and the entirety of the claim. We don't believe that the act of domestication can just cut that off. Again, that's taking one step of the transaction, saying we're going to look at that step in isolation. We'll isolate that step. And again, that's contrary to the equitable claim that we're making.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Daryl Raines of Morrison & Forster. I represent the appellee, Tails, Inc. This Court should affirm the judgment of the Circuit Court. Tails validly changed its corporate domicile from Virginia to Delaware. This Court should recognize that valid corporate act, and it should not reach out to apply Virginia law to what was by then a Delaware corporation. Mr. Hutchings addressed the true substance, or what he called the substance of the transaction, but I think the court has it exactly right. There really were a number of separate, or related, but separate transactions. Each transaction had its own substance. The first transaction was a change in corporate domicile. When you look at the true substance of the transactions, plural, you must include in that substance a decision by the corporation, approved by its shareholders, to move from Virginia to Delaware. That was part of a larger plan to become a Delaware public company. And so when you analyze the substance of the transaction, you must have in mind, in part, the substance of changing from being governed by Virginia law to Delaware law. Once that happened, the subsequent transactions, the merits transactions, the acquisition of the company, that did occur, but it occurred then governed by Delaware law as it was a Delaware corporation.
Your opposing counsel says that you are stuck with the contract that defined the domestication process as part of the transaction. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think his point really is that there were a number of related transactions. The step transaction doctrine that he invokes, I don't have any quarrel with the doctrine as long as it's correctly understood and applied. What the step transaction doctrine says really is it is a matter of contract interpretation. If you go back and read the step transaction cases, they are all cases in which a contract had some sort of triggering event. And the defendants in those cases attempted to avoid the trigger by engaging in a series of transactions or clever steps, which taken separately did not trigger the contract, but taken together would have. And the court in all those cases said, as a matter of contract interpretation, we must look at the intent of the parties. And the intent of the parties in those cases was that a triggering event would cause a certain outcome, a price adjustment clause, for example. So to get to your point, our view is the step transaction doctrine does allow you to look at all of the transactions as a series of transactions. What it does not allow you to do is say, we will ignore the first transaction, the one that resulted in a change in corporate domicile. That transaction was part of a series of related occurrences, all approved by the shareholders. But it can't be ignored. The step transaction, no step transaction case says you can ignore one of the transactions as though it did not occur. So our view is, yes, there were a series of transactions, but the first one was valid. It operated to change this company to being governed by Delaware law. That cannot be ignored or disregarded. Mr. Hutchings also argued that the independent legal significance doctrine should not apply in this case. That is, again, an argument for ignoring the change in corporate domicile. But the independent legal significance doctrine is not it's not a complicated idea. Transactions have consequences. If a transaction is valid, it has the natural consequences of that transaction. When a company changes from Virginia to Delaware, it is then governed by Delaware law. That's all the independent legal significance doctrine really means in this case. And so I think what appellants are arguing is for you to ignore the consequences of a valid corporate act, namely changing corporate domicile. And they are arguing for the application of Virginia law even after the corporate domicile had been changed. Mr. Hutchings also spoke to the consequences of allowing companies to freely change from their incorporation from Virginia to Delaware. My understanding of the history of the Virginia corporate code is that the changes that we're speaking about, the changes about when appraisal rights are triggered, occurred in 1999. It's been 15 years. There has not been a parade of horribles of companies departing Virginia to Delaware in some way that has been harmful to this commonwealth. It is true, as we cite in our brief, that companies often decide to incorporate in Delaware. That's especially true when they're ready to become a publicly traded company, as is the case here. There's nothing unusual or wrong or inequitable about changing your corporate domicile to Delaware when you want to become a public company. So that's what happened here. There hasn't been any harm to the Virginia corporate code or corporate community as a result of what we did or allowing other companies to do what we did in the future. Mr. Hutchings also was asked to address the circumstance of what the purpose was for changing corporate domicile. And he argued that the only purpose was to circumvent the appraisal rights statute in Virginia. And he was put a series of hypotheticals. What if they were independent transactions? One happened substantially in advance of the remaining transactions, and he was put to the difficult place of trying to decide how many days or weeks or months would have to pass for them to be independent. I submit that the purpose doesn't matter. One caveat. What the Virginia Code says simply is domestication rights are allowed if you follow the right procedure. Appraisal rights will not be triggered by a change in domestication. The only exception to that rule is the appeal to equity. And we acknowledge that equity is an inherent power of the court where there is inequitable, unfair, or a breach of duty that would give rise to a claim for equity. This court can step in and remedy inequitable conduct. If you were to find that there was something inequitable about what we did, you could always step in and do that. And that is what he's arguing. He's arguing it's inequitable to change domicile and then affect this transaction. But the cases we cited in our brief make it clear there is nothing inequitable about changing corporate domicile, even if you do it as part of a larger plan to go public, to make an acquisition, to effect a merger. The Alabama byproducts case and the Harrington case, which my learned opponent cited, those are cases where people argued for application of equity to create appraisal rights where none existed by statute. And in all those cases, the courts held, no, this is not inequitable. We will not invoke our equitable powers to create appraisal rights where none exist by statute. So the appeal to equity in this situation falls flat. It is not a situation where it's inequitable simply to change the state of incorporation, even if the consequence of that is that different states' laws will apply and that appraisal rights may or may not be afforded under the equitable statute.
I think to put a finer point on it, they're not claiming that the denial of appraisal rights itself is inequitable. If that were the case, the entire state of Delaware would have a problem. What he's saying is it's inequitable to take the rights that we had and to deny them in a series of transactions that was designed to do just that. So I think a finer point on that more accurately defines what his complaint is.
I have your point, and yet the cases that we cite are really analogous in this sense. Whether in Virginia or in Delaware, you can accomplish a merger or an acquisition or a sale of assets in a number of different permissible ways. Some of them will create appraisal rights, others will not. And what the Delaware court said was, in those situations, courts or companies may choose path one or path two, and the shareholders must live with the rights and duties and obligations that result as a matter of statute. And it is not inequitable to choose one path over another, even if the result is under one situation appraisal rights would be afforded, and under the other they're not afforded. In the same sense, we chose a path, the first step of which was to reincorporate in Delaware. And just as it was not wrong to make that corporate domicile change and then proceed to a sale of assets, the Delaware cases, I think, are on point in the concept. I guess I should conclude this point by saying we looked hard for any case where a court has held it was inequitable to structure a transaction in a way that did not produce appraisal rights. We could not find such a case. We did find the de facto merger cases in Delaware, which go the opposite direction. Those are all cases where people have argued, we would have had appraisal rights had this been a merger. Please treat this as a merger as a matter of equity. And in all those cases, the courts have said, no, we will allow the corporations to follow the statutory process that they chose without stepping in after the fact to call it a merger and afford appraisal rights. To conclude, Your Honors, corporations need certainty. They need predictability. The Virginia Code and the Delaware Corporate Code provide that. They tell us how to affect these transactions, and they tell us what consequences will obtain as a result. A post hoc application of review applied in hindsight to change the structure that was validly selected by Tails undercuts those policies. This court should adopt simple, clear rules. The change in corporate domicile should be recognized. It should be enforced. The law of Delaware should be applied to these transactions once the company reincorporated in Delaware. And equity should not be invoked to step in to afford appraisal rights where none is granted by statute. Thank you very much.
Call the next.